Ladies and gentlemen, it is your boy, Sammy B. Real. That sound is, of course, War by the Hypnotic Brass Ensemble. Now, holler at your boy! It took us a while to figure out the science behind it, but we got some help, and so now the Ghost Lights is big time. We're on Podbean, so please find the Ghost Lights podcast on Podbean, and then go to iTunes and subscribe and just get updated with all your theater loving. I am here today with an old friend, a former roommate, and a super talented guy with a beautiful smile and baby blue eyes, Tim Howard.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you, Tim Howard.
Well, cheers.
Cheers. Today's episode is sponsored by, unofficially, the good boys at Johnny Walker. Keep walking. Black Label Scotch Whiskey.
Oh, so smoky.
So smoky.
So good.
So good. It's a nice way to start a Friday at 3:14 in the p.m. The sun is still out. I don't feel bad about drinking at this time of day.
No, it's great.
It's great.
It's a perfect time. It's Friday. Mm-hmm. It's January. It seems like it's kind of almost spring.
Yeah. It's a great time to be alive.
We haven't really had a winter.
No. You got Bangers and Mash to look forward to.
I do.
Tonight.
I'm excited for that.
I've got rehearsal. It's been a while that we have actually sat down and chatted with anybody here at the Ghost Lights. I'm really excited that you are here with me today. We've got some big plans in the works, but probably no more bigger than Peter and the Starcatcher.
Yeah, Peter and the Starcatcher.
Yeah.
It's a fun show for an actor to be in.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Do you know much about it?
No, because I don't do musicals.
It's actually not a musical. It's a play.
Get out of here.
It's a play. It does have music in it, but in musicals, I feel, the character sings a song to progress the story along.
Mm-hmm.
As a monologue, you would just kind of sing that.
Yeah.
And big dance numbers, all that stuff. There's no big dance numbers in the show. It's done as a play with music. Mm-hmm. We all played very different roles. Orphans, pirates, sailors, natives of the island that they land on. All these characters. And, you know, we just sing like a little pirate song in the beginning. You know, it doesn't do anything. It just kind of sets up, you know, who we are. And, in the second act, we have this little vaudevillian number as mermaids, and it's great. But I don't think it's a musical.
Okay.
No.
Awesome. So, then why are you here, exactly? Because I brought you on to talk to a musical.
I'm here because you messaged me and said, I've got whiskey for you.
Oh, okay.
And I said, I'm free.
Perfect. Well, that's fantastic. Well, at least that's the case.
Yeah. Then. And just to talk about Peter and the Starcatcher, because it's one of my favorite experiences that I've had as an actor.
Have you done this show before?
No, and I knew nothing about it before.
Awesome.
It's a prequel to Peter Pan.
Mm-hmm.
An unofficial prequel, because James M. Barrie, who wrote Peter Pan back in the early 1900s, he didn't write this.
Mm.
It was written by two other guys who their daughter said, where did Peter Pan come from? And they said, oh, that's a good question.
Nice.
So they created Peter and the Starcatchers as a book for children, and it became a series.
Wow.
And Roger Rees directed the Broadway version of Peter and the Starcatcher based off of their books.
Mm.
And it's such an amazing show for an actor to be in, because it's all the sets and props that we use are on stage already.
Mm.
And we're using, you know, the planks and the ropes to create these different scenes and doorways and the deck of the ship.
Mm.
All these different things, and we never leave stage. It's a physical challenge, and it's an amazing story about how this boy who is this orphan, and he's miserable, he has no name to start out with, becomes the boy who never grew up.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I have no idea. That sounds like, and this is at Littleton Town Hall.
Littleton Town Hall, which is a great space for it, because you get the audience immersed with it.
Yeah.
And what I love about the play is, like I said, the books were meant for children. They're children books. But the play is aimed towards adults to bring out the child inside of you.
Oh.
You know, we were all sitting in a circle talking about the play. And
uh-oh.
I know, just talking about it.
A bunch of artists in the room talking about it.
Exactly.
About art.
It can get crazy.
Yeah.
Very deep.
Yeah, very deep. Very deep.
But
do
I
have whiskey?
No, I wish.
Okay.
I wish.
I interrupted. Keep telling.
Oh, it's all right. That's what we're here for.
Yeah. So this artist circle.
The artist circle, yeah, we talked about how, you know, we are, as artists and actors, the children who never grew up. We're doing what kids did when they were younger and putting on imaginary plays and not exactly lying, but we're telling the truth in imaginative circumstances. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And we're doing basically what kids do. Yeah. You know, we get to stay children forever by imagining and playing and creating. So
that's awesome. That's very true.
Yeah.
Who do you play in Peter and Circus?
I play Boy slash Peter.
Boy slash Peter.
Yes. It is called Peter and the Starcatcher, so obviously you're like, all right, Peter has to be somebody. But he starts off as Boy, no name. Mm. He's given the name Peter by a ferocious pirate named Blackstache.
Blackstache.
Who has he's an eerie mirror to the red-coated, one-handed pirate we all know and love, Captain Hook. Yeah.
Awesome.
So you also see his backstory as well, on where he comes from.
Captain Hook's backstory?
Captain Hook's backstory.
Oh, wow. He's involved in this?
He's involved in it, yeah. Tinkerbell's involved in it.
Oh, is Tink, like, Tink has always been a favorite, like an idol of mine in terms of, not like I look up to her, but I played Halo a lot as a boy.
Oh, of course.
And so Tinkerbell and Cortana for me, like, had this great similarity.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, like, the idea that there was this, I guess the effervescent, clairvoyant, expert on all things with magic.
Yeah.
Helping out our hero, who is either just headstrong or not yet fully realized.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Was there for, like, so that's cool that we get to see Tinkerbell at that stage.
And Tinkerbell's not played by a human, you know.
No.
In Peter Pan, the stage play, she's just a light.
Yeah.
In this, you see, once she becomes Tinkerbell, she is a light.
Mm-hmm.
We want to respect that in what they did with the original stage production of Peter Pan.
Mm.
But she starts off as a bird. Okay. As a bird, which is interesting because in James M. Barrie's history of Peter Pan first arrived as a seven-day-old. Yeah.
Okay.
A week old
baby.
Baby in Kensington Gardens, okay. whose stroller kind of escaped, and J.M. Barrie said, you know, before children are children, and before they're babies, they're birds, and they're free.
Wow.
And so I think that's very cool how, a different take on it.
Yeah.
How Tinkerbell's this bird, and kind of looks after Peter in the second act for a bit, and eventually becomes his guardian.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
It is. It's a lot of fun. It's a crazy journey for everyone in the show.
How many people are involved? How big is the ensemble?
12 actors. We got 11 men and one female, which is very, very cool. It takes place in a time, 1885, when Queen Victoria ruled the British Empire.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that we have one female in the cast who is the basic leader. She's the leader of the entire. Her character is the main leader.
Oh, that's cool.
And she's only 13 years old.
Wow.
The character, not
the
actress.
Okay.
But we have men playing women as well.
Wow.
But we have that one strong female presence
that's good.
I feel like is needed for the show.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. And when does it open again?
Opens next Friday, January 12th.
Then your run dates like standard Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I think we have one Wednesday. I'm not really sure when that is.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we close February 4th. It's a short run, but hey, I'm going to lose some weight from it because it's so physical.
Yeah, you're running around.
Yeah.
There's one thing I was going to say about you, Tim, is like you've let yourself go since last I've seen you.
I have, you know.
I think you're at like 130 the last time I saw you. Now you're at like 132, and that's really scary.
You know, and a break will do that for you.
Yeah.
I finished Rock of Ages and, you know, had some good old Chicago pizza, went on a trip and went to San Antonio, had tacos.
Yeah.
Just, you know, living my life.
Definitely.
And tonight, bangers and mash. But
bangers
after that, mash. After that, Sam, only bangers.
Only bangers? That sounds like my kind of party.
It does. It does.
Well, thank you again so much, Tim, for joining us today for the Ghost Hunters podcast.
Of course.
And now we've done our housekeeping and we've talked about Peter and the Starcatcher.
Yeah.
Tell me, acting.
Acting.
What did it for you? What got the hooks in you?
What got the hooks for me? Oh, I can see what you did there.
Yeah.
Well, I started when I was 8 years old.
Mm.
A young tyke.
Yeah.
And a lot of people you'll ask to be like, oh, I was doing play and, you know, the just a girl, you know, drew me to theater. Mm. That wasn't my case because I was just before puberty. Didn't like girls then.
No.
Still don't. Ew. Yeah. Yucky.
Yeah, you only like yeah. women.
Exactly.
Yeah.
See. Yep. and I was drawn to the aspect of being on stage. And I think then when I was younger, I loved attention. That's what it was. You know?
You liked attention?
I think I still do.
Yeah.
I think every actor has some sort of, you know, they want to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
There's more to them than there is to them.
Yeah.
And they want to show it.
Okay.
But I love perform. I love to sing. I was doing that in my backyard and just in the living room, dancing around and all this stuff. Was I good? No. But my parents kind of caught on to that, and they enrolled me into the Academy of Theater Arts. It was a children's school, after school. Mm-hmm. And there I met a lot of my good friends who I'm still best friends with today.
Nice.
And we did children's shows, children putting on shows for children.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't very good scripts, but it was an amazing experience because we had equity directors and dancers who worked at the old Country Dinner Playhouse, the old barn.
Okay.
And so we got to work on a professional stage.
Awesome.
And it made me realize this is what I love to do. I love to be here, and there's so many different characters that I'm playing, and I want to keep doing this and explore, you know, who I am. And
how old were you when you were working at the Country Dinner Playhouse with those guys?
8 through 18.
8 through 18.
Yeah, I did a couple of professional shows there as well.
Nice.
With the theater.
Mm-hmm.
Sound of Music and King and I.
Okay.
And it was just a great experience for a child to have, working with adults like that, getting to realize what professionalism is about.
Totally.
And yeah.
Yeah.
And later on, I was diagnosed. This is going to get deep.
Uh-oh.
Apologize.
Don't apologize.
I got diagnosed with Tourette's syndrome. Okay. And I was made fun of a lot because of my tics.
Mm-hmm.
And I found acting as a way to escape that.
Mm.
When I was playing a character, I wasn't me.
Mm.
And I was happier.
Totally.
And eventually, my mom actually told me that when I was on stage, my tics went away. I was just so comfortable up there that I wasn't me anymore, really.
That's fantastic.
I mean, I was still me, you know,
yeah,
thinking like me. But
physiology, I can't even speak physically.
Yeah.
Not so much. With
yeah, it was. It was just I was where I was. I was kind of I was home.
Mm.
So.
Well, that's great. And now, how old are you? If you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
I'm a good ripe age of 22.
22.
I'm kidding. Oh. I'm reaching 30, Sam.
Reaching 30?
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm 29. I'll turn 30 in June.
You're still a young pup.
Is that gray hair I see?
Yeah, this is gray hair in the beard. This is totally gray hair in the beard. By the way, I won't tell anyone that you've been dying for the last 2 years.
Oh, that's true.
No, but so to go further along this deep road that you've taken us down, when was the last time you experienced a tic, or do you still deal with it on a single occasion? Because from when I met you, outside of you telling me, I never would have pegged.
No one ever believes me that
yeah.
that I have Tourette's.
Mm-hmm.
And I still feel like it's a part of me, even if it doesn't show up.
Okay.
And it very rarely ever shows up. A little tick will happen here and there, but I feel like I've gotten so used to the controlling it
mm-hmm.
that it just goes away. And
nice.
The last time was probably high school that it was really noticeable.
Okay. Do you mind if I ask how did it usually manifest itself?
So Tourette's, people think, you know, they'll curse and just right. endless.
Mm.
That's a major diagnosis.
It's a severe case.
Severe case, yes. Mine wasn't so severe. It was still about not being able to control certain things.
Mm-hmm.
I would blink. Just squint my eyes so tight that that I would need to feel a release.
Mm.
And it would tense up my entire face and neck to the point where I couldn't really talk because my voice had been so strained from me tightening every single muscle in my face. Mm-hmm. Along with that, I was afraid to swallow my saliva.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I would, at recess, I would constantly spit. It'd be gross, and people would make fun of that. Like, stop spitting. Mm-hmm. And when I was inside in class, I couldn't spit on the carpet. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could, but who would? Yeah. So I would just kind of wipe it on my shirt and leave this big, you know, wet stain on my shirt. And it wasn't fun to go around with that and have people make fun of you because they don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what Tourette's was. Yeah. So,
well, that's amazing. I mean, to hear about that level of severity, and yes, it was at a young age, but there are people who deal with some form of Tourette's their entire lives.
Maybe
they can manage it, but then it still manifests like in a little wink
exactly.
A grinding of teeth or something like that, to the extreme cases like we noted. I mean, I used to go to the gym at the Schleschman YMCA. And that was decades ago, and you can tell by looking at how awesome my body is now.
You know, Sam, you've surpassed me in the physical looks.
You're damn straight. But I would go to this gym, and there we had this one particular woman who would come in, and her level of Tourette's was pretty severe, and she'd show up. And I felt terrible for her because like, she'd show up, she'd be cursing, she'd go to a treadmill, and the second she walked into the cardio room, people would leave. And then they would go and complain about her, and I was like, well, what dick?
There's nothing she can do because it's a control thing.
Yeah, and it's an imbalance somewhere that neither I nor understand how to fix, or is something that can be easily managed in the moment. Right. It goes beyond just saying, Tim, don't do that.
Yeah,
Tim, you're drawing attention to yourself.
Exactly.
It's more than that.
Yeah,
and so it's cool to see that it's. Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
That
with us. Basically, like I feel like theater saved me in that aspect of my life, which is why I respect it so much, because it made me who I am. Tourette's made me who I am, along with theater, and also the tons of medication that I took.
Well, totally. Yeah. Hey, cheers to medication.
Cheers to medication. Yes. Oh.
I'm getting a little low on my Johnny. We might need to go for a refill.
I think so.
But anyway. So that happened. You go through college. You find yourself. Well, maybe you're still finding yourself. You're able to find a calling.
Find a calling, exactly. What I want
to
do.
Surpass to a degree, if not completely, your Tourette's.
Yes.
That's a Herculean effort. And then what is it? Is it only like for example, like I was joking earlier about you're not in a musical this time around. What are your favorite forms of performance? Is it the all around thing? Do you want to be like a Neil Patrick Harris? Or do you want to be something completely different?
That would be fun. No one's going to be a Neil Patrick Harris because he's a magician. Mm-hmm. Clown. He does everything.
Yeah.
The reason I love musicals, is because that's what I was brought up with doing. Mm-hmm. The children's shows that we would do were musicals.
Yeah.
And I practiced singing and was taking from vocal teachers my entire life, elementary school, middle school, high school, college.
Yeah.
Still do somewhat to this day. Keep my voice in check.
Mm-hmm.
To do what I want to do. And you know, there are actors who say, you know, musicals, it's not real acting, stuff like that. I will disagree.
Mm-hmm.
Only because in a musical you're doing three things at once. You're acting, you're singing, and you're sometimes dancing.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to do that all at the same time.
Yeah.
Which is what I love. It's a challenge. And lately I've been more focusing on the acting part of things. I definitely feel you take the same approach in a play. I hate the term straight play. Could it be a gay play or something? I don't know.
Well, yeah. Well,
gay plays musical, probably.
Don't get fired. That's all I'll say.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Yeah, so there's different approaches. I feel like it's the same approach in any acting concept. You can have your different methods, anything you want. But for me, I take the same approach as an actor as I do anytime I'm in a play or a musical. Mm-hmm. Whether I've got to tell the story.
Yeah.
That's when it comes down to it. We're all storytellers. Yeah. So.
So then, in that regard, how would you describe your process then? Would you say your method? I've never heard it, and forgive me, because I don't know nearly enough about musicals. I made a choice early on in college, like, probably not the best for me.
Yeah.
I can sing at a karaoke bar. That's my cap.
It's a different style of theater. It's a different art form. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But we're doing the exact same thing, and that's telling a story. Mm-hmm. I have thought about what my method is for a long time. Mm-hmm. You go to college and you learn, you know, Stanislavski and God, I'm not even good at this stuff because I don't want to sound arrogant or cocky. It's always come more naturally to me.
Okay.
Just feeling human emotions.
Yeah.
And I think that's what my method is trying to understand this character's emotions. Mm-hmm. And creating them on stage, but still having a part of me in the character as well.
Mm-hmm.
So when you
look at a script and you're reading it, or you know, you're getting pieces of the music here and there as you're going through it, are you able to like recognize what it in the moment reading it brings up for you, and then applying that in the moment, or you know, are you looking at backstory, creating one if necessary?
I will read the script, mm-hmm. and I will read it once as just Tim mm-hmm. reading the script. I will read every character in my head. I'm creating characters for each different character, including the one that I'll be playing. Mm-hmm. The second time I read it through, I will read it and focus on the character that I will be portraying. And think about, okay, what's his journey? Where does it start? You know, what's he going to go through? And the third time is where I'm thinking, all right, backstory. Where is he coming from? Which for Peter and the Starcatcher, he's an orphan. All you know is he has no family. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know his mother or father. And he's miserable because he keeps getting beatings by the schoolmaster. Mm. And it's a hard one. I'm like, okay, well, his story's already there for me, mm-hmm. his backstory. You don't know where he comes from. So he doesn't remember much of anything. Mm-hmm. And when he goes on this journey, he doesn't miss much. Yeah. So I decided not to focus on the backstory because it's not where he's coming from. Ultimately, this character, it's where he's going. Mm-hmm. And it's who he's going to be and what he's going to be. But with any other show, I will think about, you know, his backstory. There's somewhere in the script that talks about, it's a little hint about where this character is coming from. And you got to find it. And sometimes I'll just take a nice little edible and just read the script. Or watch Hook.
There you go. Just press play.
Exactly. Exactly.
Pay attention.
Right. Yeah.
Just try as you might. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, talking method is so hard for me because I've never understood exactly what my methods are. All I know is I just keep doing what I do, and hopefully it's right, and the director can help me along. Yeah.
Do you have any influences that have, like, helped you shape how you perform? I mean, you say it comes naturally, but is there, like, when you think about, I don't know, Hugh Jackman is an excellent mm-hmm. performer.
Yes. Yes.
Who do you say, like, that's where I'm molding that, or like I see that in my work ethic.
The two people that come to mind are Robin Williams and Jim Carrey. And the reason for that is I was brought up as a child actor from an actor in Denver. His name is Paul Dwyer. Mm. And he was one of our directors and teachers at the Academy of Theater Arts. Yep. And I wasn't a lead when I was younger. I wasn't the romantic interest or anything. I was the...
No, you weren't.
And I still am not in life.
Nice.
I was the sidekick, the character who would always get the laughs, and I enjoyed that because I loved Robin Williams and Jim Carrey's comedic timing, and comedic timing was another one that I just understood. I understood how comedy should be, and I have a passion for comedy, and there are times when I'm like, you know what, I'm tired of being the leading man. Mm-hmm. You know, he gets the girl, but at some points I just kind of want to have fun and just be that.
Be a clown.
The clown, you know? Yeah.
Are you auditioning for, it's kind of diverging, are you auditioning for 39 Steps at Miner's Alley?
The two clown parts. I was thinking about it. I think I'm still going to submit my headshot resume to them.
Okay.
I'll be going right into Tech Week. Mm-hmm. And it's on Monday, right? Monday. 8th. Yeah. And it's a busy day for me. I've got a couple job interviews as well in the morning. But I don't want to keep doing that.
Yeah.
But it's something that interests me. You know, after doing this play and realizing kind of what actor I want to be and collaborative and creative, and everyone works together, and there's no leader, there should never be one weakest link.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the director and the actor should all be on the same page and be creating art.
Absolutely.
You know, that's kind of what I'm going through right now. Because this show brings it out of you.
Yeah.
And 39 Steps is exactly that. Mm-hmm. You know, you have two clowns who play more than 100 characters probably.
Yeah.
But such a fun show.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought about it, and I think you know, I will submit to that.
Definitely. Get on it.
So. Get on it, because it's coming up.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, so. But if not, you know, there's always going to be other opportunities.
Totally.
So
one of the things that... is really kind of interests me late having you as a guest is I've had a couple interviews with people, Kevin Lowry and other people who have like made art creation of
it
as actors or directors kind of their main source of income, for lack of a better word. You had made plans to go to Chicago, and that was about, like, last time I saw you was about maybe 6 months ago.
Yeah, almost a year, probably.
Almost a year, yeah. And it's and so that's kind of that's taken its journey. What do you want? You want theater to be a vehicle to just see how far you can go?
Yes, and no.
Okay.
More towards the yes. When I first wanted to go to Chicago, I felt stuck here. I have been performing in Colorado my entire life from a kid, and I reached a point where I felt like I had somewhat kind of made it.
Mm-hmm.
That yes, there are still theaters that I had not worked at that I still want to work at. And I decided, you know what, maybe just a nice change in environment and culture would be a good move for me. And I got very excited about that. And I even visited Chicago. Just November.
Yeah.
And loved it out there.
Shout outs to giving the finger to the Trump building.
Shout out to that.
Yeah.
We both did that and I loved it.
It was beautiful.
Sorry, whiskey break.
Yeah, whiskey break.
But I was still focusing on that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the thing of, okay, I don't have enough money to go right now, and you know, there's gonna be always something holding me back from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I got into this production, and what I love about this play is it changed me as a person as well,
mm-hmm.
as an actor. And
what production
as,
was this?
Peter and the Starcatcher.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because it's something that I've never done before.
Nice.
You know, I've always just gone in, director has a vision,
mm-hmm.
we follow his orders, we create our characters, And that's it. But as this, we're creating as an ensemble piece.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's working together to create something. And we're all, you know, we go get some wings after rehearsal. We talk about our characters. We talk about, you know, what great company we're in, mm-hmm. and how we can make the show what it's meant to be. And
nice.
We're never done learning, even after rehearsal is done.
Totally.
So I felt, you know, maybe Chicago is not the right place for me at this time.
Mm-hmm.
At some point in my life, I would love to go. I don't want to give up on that, because I feel as a human, if you have a passion and you have something you want to go for, you go for it, because in a couple of years, you're never going to be able to do that again, or have regrets if you never did it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to go along that same vein, I think you might not even have a couple of years.
I'm getting old, Sam.
Well, not even that. I don't even want to think this deeper than that.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, life changes on a dime.
Exactly.
Life changes on a dime. I feel like, I mean, without going too much into me, because you're my guest, like, one night I decided after the night of You on the Moors up in Boulder, I wanted to get another drink. So I went to Golden, and the bar I wanted to go to was closing down, so I went to the Underground, and from that day forward, I feel like my life has taken a completely different turn.
How so?
Well, I met a lucky lady.
I got lucky
and met a beautiful woman. Yeah. And she's been supportive, and she's taken up for me, and how I felt about what I do on a day-to-day basis has kind of changed. So much of what I did before was like, I need to support theater. I need to support myself enough to do theater. Whereas now I'm like, well, fuck, you know? I just need to be happy.
That's what it is. You need to be happy doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I feel like that came across to me. I was not as happy as I could be doing what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, what if I get to Chicago? And there's always the what if.
Yeah, of course.
If I get to Chicago, is it going to be the exact same thing? Am I going to be just in a different culture, but will I still be unhappy?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like as an actor, there's more that I want to do.
Yeah.
And there's more theaters in Colorado that I would like to be a part of,
mm-hmm.
To explore the creativity and the design and just creativeness
mm-hmm.
of it all.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's where I am as a person and as an actor. And I'm excited to see where that goes and to work on levels that challenge me.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you've... One of the things I've always enjoyed about our conversations is that you've always got this bit of clarity, and you're able to think out what you want to say. And I thank you again for being so candid.
Oh, you're welcome.
See, we've been doing this for about 33 minutes. This is a good conversation. I'm really kind of
happy. It is. It's been fun.
First time back at it.
It's been fun.
So I'm like trying to
engage
my questions. Dude, we're here at the home of the Daffel.
The Daffel. Which I was not a part of this year.
No. How are you doing with your out without your fantasy league?
You know, I'm doing okay.
Yes.
Here's the thing.
I'll take that as a slight. That's totally fine.
No, Daffel is one of the football leagues that I've been a part of that I loved.
Nice.
You know, we were a group of family,
mm-hmm.
and I felt a part of that family for that year that I was a part of it,
mm-hmm.
and. Honestly, I'm not the best with fantasy football leagues.
Mm.
I think I kind of forgot about them, like my teams.
Yeah.
Because
that
I'm
evident.
I'm like, oh, all my players are on bye week. I should have done something.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things that I'm like, you know what? This is taking too much time out of my life, and I'm ruining things. And I feel like they need someone who will be a better fit.
Well, the people of the Denver Actor Fantasy Football League, otherwise known as the Daffel, your commish, the Chocolate Touch,
I'm still the Irish Fire.
You're still the
I'll
Irish
always
Fire.
Be the Irish Fire.
Totally. I'm thankful that we still got the Queen of Boners with us.
You know what? And I love that she's no longer the Lady Boners.
Yeah, me too.
Because she's the one woman in the league.
Yeah.
She's the queen.
She's the queen. She runs. Yeah. She runs the show.
At home too. She runs the show.
Better. Steph is not to be trifled with. Steph, you better be a guest of mine as well.
She should be.
She should be. That's going to happen
soon. I keep telling her, you know, she's gotten so many awards from college for acting.
Mm-hmm.
And she's doing the dancing and musical theaters.
Yeah.
And I keep telling her, because I'm going through this and I'm who I want to be and mm-hmm. what I want to be. And I've been talking with her about it, and she's supportive and wants me to do what I want to do. And
good.
I told her, I was like, you should do more focusing on your acting,
mm-hmm.
Because I want to see more of that.
Yeah.
In the shows that I've been in with her, with, mm-hmm. what did I say?
I have no idea.
In the shows that we've been in together.
Yes, that's good English.
Yeah, it's the Johnny Walker Black.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shout outs.
Our unofficial sponsors
today. She's so good, and she chooses her characters wisely, mm-hmm. and they're so vastly different, and it's fun watching her.
Yeah. I will attest to that. Yeah. One of my favorite moments from seeing West Side Story back at the Littleton,
which we met in and became an item in.
Yeah. Her dance at the top of Act Two, I believe, after intermission.
Yes. Yeah.
For lack of a better phrase, I'll call it the ghost dance.
It is the ghost dance. Yeah. Yeah.
That was a really cool moment, and she owned it, and that's awesome.
It was her.
Like, I didn't know if that was. I'm sure that was part of the script.
It is. There's always two featured dancers who are West Side Story. You got the Sharks and the Jets,
yeah.
Puerto Rican and American.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about that dance is there. You got the male dancer who's a Puerto Rican, mm-hmm. And a female dancer who is a. American,
mm-hmm.
and they come together and create this dance together,
mm-hmm.
And it's after both
heinous murders
and all this stuff, and it's about coming together, and
after
she
after a gypsy knife fight
exactly yeah. Of course I was enjoying backstage as being done with the show because I had died.
Yeah. how does that feel to be like, I've got a whole act now to just chill out back here?
Well, it was great. I mean, honestly, me and Kent who played Bernardo, and I played Riff. We both died at the end of Act 1.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible ending for an act.
Oh, yeah.
Leaves the audience kind of speechless.
Yeah. What comes next?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
These guys both died.
Yeah.
Who's the leaders? Mm-hmm. And so the only thing we have to do in Act 2 is be part of that ghost dance,
mm-hmm.
where we reenact the rumble.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're done.
Nice.
And we just sat around, and we was at Town Hall, so we're just outside on the dock and just kind of talking about life, and it was great to catch up because we'd both done the production exactly 10 years from when it 2006,
mm-hmm.
so we did 2005, and we had
Nine.
Yeah, we were both in the exact same production directed by Nick Sugar on the Town Hall stage
10 years apart. That's cool.
Yeah, so it was great to kind of have that new experience with each other.
What are some of the productions that have helped to define your career to this point? I assume you got a lot of accolades from Bonnie and Clyde. You recently did a show at the Boulder Dinner Theater.
Yeah, now the BDT stage.
The BDT stage.
Yes, yes. Stage.
Stage?
Stage, BDT stage.
BDT stage.
yeah,
just
so...
Just like Boulder. Sorry. I love Boulder.
It's a great place. It was a fun place to work, too. Everyone there is so friendly. What kind of shaped my career?
Yeah. Shows, performances.
You know...
That stick out, at least.
That stick out. I was in Oliver at Town Hall Arts Center, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
I played the title role, Oliver. And that was an experience for me as a 13-year-old, getting to play that lead,
mm-hmm.
that orphan. And, when I was reading Peter and the Starcatcher, going back to what I'm in now...
Yeah.
I immediately thought of Oliver.
Nice.
You know, and what a way to kind of, if this is my last show at Town Hall for a while, what a way to kind of round out that, or bookend my experience there. You know, you start as an orphan,
mm-hmm.
and I ended as an orphan, but became someone else. And I think that's kind of, on a personal level, I'm becoming who I'm going to be. So I thank Town Hall for that as well.
Definitely.
But
that's a great way of looking at it.
Yeah, it was cool insight when I thought about that. I was like, oh man, this is really interesting that I get to play this orphan type and this Charles Dickens orphan type kind of twice and again, bring back my child.
Nice.
And let's see, I came back from college and got cast as Leo Bloom in The Producers again at Town Hall. Most of my things happened at Town Hall. So I'm looking forward to doing more things on other stages.
The next stage.
Mm-hmm. The producers kind of, as John Moore said, really kind of made me into a leading man.
Oh wow!
And from then on out, I was cast as more leads,
mm-hmm.
which was an amazing experience as a 22-year-old and all my 20s. I got to play all these roles that I never thought I would play. These roles that were never dream roles, but they became dream roles. Mm. You know, Finch in How to Succeed in Business.
Yeah.
One of my favorite roles I have ever played. I went through a con artist phase, and I played a couple con artists, and it was so cool to kind of find their journey and, you know, who are these people really and why are they doing this? And it fit exactly where I was in my stage of life, and I kind of grew up with them.
Nice.
Finch, Catch Me If You Can, I worked at the Aurora Fox and, mm-hmm. you know, played the classic Leonardo DiCaprio role of Frank Abagnale Jr., and another great role of a kid becoming an adult way too fast. He kind of missed his childhood and, you know, or his, he became an adult before he was ready.
Hmm. Do you feel, I'm just, you mentioned that becoming an adult too early, and you're essentially a child star, albeit here in Colorado from the age of 8 doing work. Do you feel like that's affected you in any way? That you were getting work as 8 years old, putting in extra effort after school to make these shows happen, doing that throughout high school. Like, I got into the game of theater, I would say late. Like, I was 25 when I had a conversation with a professor at Metro, mm-hmm. going like, oh, yeah, maybe I could do acting all the time.
Yeah.
And then that just, it blossomed from there. I had some level of self-awareness, whereas, I mean, it sounds like for me that I don't, like, if I were in your shoes at the age of 8 doing shows until I was 29. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I don't think of it like that. It definitely shaped me, mm-hmm. in a way that I didn't quite understand until I was in my late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
But then, and even after college, it was just something that I just loved to do.
Mm-hmm.
I loved to be on stage. I loved the friends that I made. Theater became a family to me, and it every show you were in, you became a part of a new family.
Yeah.
And that's what I loved. And I love to, at the end of the show, when we're taking our bows, I love to see how the audience appreciated what we gave them.
Mm-hmm.
It's never about, talking about bows, it's never about them appreciating me. I want to appreciate them. Because they came here and they appreciated art.
Mm.
And we made them feel something and hopefully changed their lives in some specific way or made them think differently in some specific way. Just to let them escape.
Mm-hmm. Was it always like that for you?
Yeah. Originally, it was about me being on stage and making people laugh.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Mm.
And going back to Robin Williams and Jim Carrey, I loved how they made me feel.
Mm.
And I wanted to make people feel that similar way. Similar. Yes. Yeah. And, you know, as time went on, Robin Williams and Jim Carrey both became amazing dramatic actors.
Mm.
And Jim Carrey kind of went a little too far, if you've seen the documentary Jim and Andy.
I have. I liked it a lot.
It was an amazing documentary.
Yeah.
And I watched that and was kind of like, okay, don't ever become that.
Mm.
But, you know, that was his personal experience. That's what he was going through. You know, he was going through his own personal thing, and he had to do what he had to do. And
so, to go along those lines, me and you, I think, have differing opinions on that level of commitment. Why not do what Jim Carrey did during the Andy Kaufman movie? Man on the Moon.
Man on the Moon. Here's the thing, and what I'll say is I'm going to agree with you and say if he hadn't had done that, I don't think his performance would have been the same.
Mm-hmm.
But watching how it affected everyone on set, I don't want to ever put anyone through that.
Do you want to alienate?
I don't want to alienate. I don't want to make my director mad at me,
yeah.
and, you know, get a phone call from Milos Forman, who directed that movie, and just say, we should fire Andy and Tony.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim was like, well, we can do that. I can do great impersonations of them.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, but Milos, he knew that Jim Carrey couldn't do that.
Yeah.
that he needed to go through this process. And he said, no, we're not going to fire them. I just wanted to talk to Jim. Mm-hmm. I wanted to hear your voice.
Yeah.
And that made me go, wow. As an actor, I don't ever want to become that because I still want to be part of myself as well.
No, totally.
I still want to be me. And you know, I've never gotten a role to play Andy Kaufman, who's such an incredible mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trying to get into his mind,
yeah.
Jim Carrey did.
Yeah.
He did. And I made a goal for myself that I will be an actor who will find the line,
mm-hmm.
but I will try not to cross it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm still a young spring chicken,
mm-hmm.
as you
pup.
Said. Pup, a pup, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I feel like I'm turning real old.
Yeah.
but, you know, you never know. You know, life goes on. And
mm-hmm.
Right now I'm kind of where I want to be mm-hmm. in the actor that I would like to be.
Well, definitely.
And maybe that will change.
Yeah. Life, so. I mean, like I said, life changes on a dime.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know, I'll get, going along with that, when The Revenant came out,
mm-hmm.
and we talked about Leonardo DiCaprio and how they were in freezing cold weather and all that stuff. And
yeah.
he was really, really kind of becoming this character and going through what this character is going through,
yeah.
which is a great technique. But I also feel like, as Laurence Olivier said to Dustin Hoffman, next time try acting,
mm-hmm.
you know. And if everyone has different opinions on what acting is and, you know, how far can you go
mm-hmm.
and how do I become this character and really portray this character truthfully.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's up to every artist to interpret.
Yeah.
I'm just not one of those who feels like they need to become the character.
Mm-hmm.
As I was saying earlier, we're storytellers. Our goal is to tell the story. And these are movie actors as well that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But as a stage actor, I feel like it'd be different.
Yeah.
I feel like it'd be different as a stage actor to just become the character. And, you know, for the whole 4 weeks that we're performing the show, I would just be a child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would never get a job. I would just sit around and play, and Stephanie would hate me. And so... you know, I there's definitely my life that I want to take care of as well.
Totally.
So,
that, I mean, no, that's a thank you for being so thoughtful about that. That
line I was kind of rambling. I'm sorry if I made no sense.
No,
but
I mean, listen, part of hosting a podcast is understanding that I will ramble and that at times my guests will ramble. The whiskey, the scotch helps.
It does. That. It does. Sometimes I'm like, what did I say?
Yeah. I mean, when we talk about, like, I watched that documentary. I had such a great time.
Oh, it was brilliant. It was a brilliant documentary.
Yeah,
you
shut up.
Well, hello.
Hello. But one of the things that I loved about it is, like, especially because I like hearing Jim Carrey talk now.
I do too.
The woke, quote unquote, quality of his life that is presented to us
yeah.
now. And I think when I was back in college, I did a performance of A Tale of Two Cities, and the last night of the show, I'll remember the feeling for as long as I live. I remember doing the show, starting the show, and then I remember taking my vows.
Yeah.
And everything that happened in between, I don't remember. And everyone tells me to this day, is like, I never missed my cues, I was always on my mark, so on and so forth. And yeah, it was.
Yeah.
But I don't remember it. And to an extent, that is like giving yourself and losing yourself to the
process. Absolutely, absolutely. And I've done that. I also have... well, hello.
Hi.
Hi, Caleb.
Hello.
This is Tim Howard. You're live with the Ghost Lights podcast.
Excellent.
Yes.
Welcome.
Welcome.
What was I saying?
We were talking about losing ourselves in the performance.
Yeah. I guess I've never been one of those, you know, I'll exit the stage and I'll be me.
Mm-hmm.
And then right when I go on, I just know what I need to do as an actor and as a human
mm-hmm.
to portray the character. So I'll just enter and hopefully the audience will see the character and not me, essentially.
Yeah. Absolutely. One of the things that, like, I guess since that performance in college, I've tried to a degree find that within myself in performances.
Yeah.
And I always for lack of, I guess, for the longest time, it was do the depressing, straight, hard plays, and you'll get back to that spot. Go to the brooding side of you.
Mm-hmm.
There was a cat climbing the back of my chair. And in that process, I feel like giving too much to the script can be hard. And I did a show called Coronado where that's where I developed a very heavy drinking problem. My character did a shot and a beer regularly, so I wanted to know what that felt like.
Yeah.
One night I went out and I did that, and I did the scene in which he has like four before the scene starts up, and has like another three
over
the course of that scene. And you give into that darkness and the rage that he was trying to subdue with his drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hurtful. Luckily at the time, or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, I was single, so I wasn't taking that home to anybody.
Yeah.
But there was something to be said. Like, you can't tread those waters of full immersion without a tether.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I think one of the things I loved about that documentary and about just the awareness of self.
Yeah.
When we talk about creating a character and telling a story, is that understanding where our lines are exactly.
And everyone has different lines, mm-hmm. you know, and I respect that. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always respected method actors because I don't see their process. I don't see their process, mm-hmm. but what I see on stage shows up.
Yeah.
And it's exactly what I was hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
I'm enticed by their character, and I'm entertained and wowed. Like, wow, they did an amazing job portraying that character.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with this one, Peter and the Starcatcher, it's just more of me finding my inner child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm playing a boy, a 13-year-old boy. You know, at some points in the show, he's kind of starting puberty and feeling feelings that he's never felt before. But he never quite gets there. He's on the tip of the roller coaster where he almost becomes an adult and he stays there.
Mm.
Which is fascinating for me as an actor to kind of discover and go through emotionally and physically. And I've had many times when I sit at home and Stephanie's at work and I just like, all right, take this time. You're alone. You're free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just have fun and say these lines to yourself and just experiment and take what you learn tonight and go to rehearsal the next day and just have fun. Don't be afraid to go too far.
Yeah.
Cause that's what the director's for, is to say you're going a little too far. Come
yeah.
back.
Yeah. Let the director be the tether. Exactly.
Exactly.
Try it out with no judgments.
Exactly.
Usually when I wrap up the end of our podcast episodes, I ask my guests how they would like to leave the ghost light on for somebody. What's a message they would pass on to the people listening who are trying to get to Tim Howard's level or just trying to act? What's something that what's a message you'd leave them with?
I would say, never stop discovering. There's more to everyone. And that's what I'm going through, is there's more to me than there is to me, which is a quote in The Producers.
Yes.
I've played Leo Bloom 2 times, and Max Bialystock says to him, "There's more to you. Don't you know that there's more to you than there is to you?"
Mm-hmm.
And Leo discovers that.
Yes.
And I want to take that with me. There's more to me than there is to me. And there's more to you than there is to you.
Nice. That's great.
That's it. Keep discovering, keep creating, and you'll find where you want to be.
Fantastic. Tim, thank you so much
for
joining us tonight.
This has been fun.
Definitely.
In the old house.
Time. Yeah, at the old Dapple Crib.
Yes.
HQ. Before we go here at the Ghost Lights, just some more housekeeping. We are looking for corporate sponsors, so if you're interested, please message me, comment. Again, follow us on Podbean, subscribe on iTunes, like us on Facebook. Tim, please, I hope you'll share this interview on your Facebook page amongst your chums.
I will.
And hopefully we'll get some more likes out of this. Big shout out to Daniel Langhoff and Ken Street, two great actors and good people that we lost in 2017. I've had the good fortune of working with Ken Street and having fun, long conversations with Daniel Langhoff.
Oh, Dan, he was an amazing man.
Yeah.
We're actually dedicating our performance to Peter to Dan.
Awesome.
So.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Honestly, give to the Denver Actors Fund. Go see Peter and the Starcatcher opening January 12th at the Littleton Town Hall Arts Center. Give your boy Tim Howard some love. Clap it up for him. And
clap if you believe.
That's right. Clap if you believe. And before we go, we do what we always do. We rock out with a fun song by the Hypnotic Brass Ensemble. Enjoy the Ghost Lights. We out.